Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by nobody. I am out here in Vegas. I am going to record a quick mailbag today just because it seems like there are still a few dominoes falling. The Lakers still haven't announced Rajon Rondo, which I kind of find interesting. I would imagine he's still on the roster. But, you know, and some people are saying, well, it's because he's on a minimum. They've signed other guys to their minimum contract and thus, you know, might not care as much about that. We'll keep an eye on that situation out there. The other big news of the day was also LeBron James apparently being moved into the starting lineup. He's going to be starting at point guard. LeBron James starting next year for the Lakers. Breaking news. He is going to be playing point guard next year for the Lakers. And what this means to me is that they're trying to find a way because they don't really, I mean, if you look at their roster, point guard is far and away the position of most weakness there, right? They have Danny Green at the two. They now signed Avery Bradley also at the two. They have Kentavious Caldwell-Pope at the two, so their shooting guard rotation is pretty much set. Small forward, obviously, you have LeBron James, and then you have Kyle Kuzma and Jared Dudley and guys like that. You have at power forward, you have LeBron who will play some four. Anthony Davis is obviously there. DeMarcus Cousins, if they really want to go big. They're at the five. They have JaVale McGee and they have DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis. So I think what they're trying to figure out a way to do is get as many of their best players on the court at the same time. And seeing as LeBron basically plays de facto point guard anyway on offense, you roll with that. The problem, however, is how do you defend the other point guards? You have, when you go up against Steph Curry, you don't want, you know, Danny Green chasing him all over throughout the screens, right? You don't want, maybe you can do that with Avery Bradley, maybe you can do that with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, but Avery Bradley is a little overrated as a defender at this stage of his career. Caldwell-Pope, I just don't really want to have to rely on him very much while the games matter because he just isn't very, he hasn't been very good when those games have mattered. So that's kind of where you leave us. I'll probably get to this over the course of the mailbag, though. Let's answer this first question here. This is from RW1061. Hey, Anthony, love the podcast. An offense with LeBron James and Anthony Davis seems to be a no-brainer. There's no way Frank and the coaching staff can screw it up, right? Also, what archetypes of players fit best along with them? 3-and-D, wing 2, whatever. So we already know how the roster filled out. I think they did a pretty good job of it. Pete and I talked about this yesterday on the show. One thing that I really like about the roster is that it is flexible. It is very malleable to various situations. The one, I guess, glaring weakness that they're going to face is when they go up against ball-dominant, very quick point guards who don't rely heavily on pick and rolls, right? Because if you're going up against a team that has a ball dominant point guard who relies heavily on pick and rolls, well, Anthony Davis is pretty good at handling those situations. But if you have a more isolation heavy point guard or somebody who really relies on breaking down the defense by himself, that's where the Lakers are really going to struggle here. So From a roster constructive perspective, there are obviously complaints. I think they overpaid Avery Bradley. I don't know who else was going to pay him any more than the minimum. I don't really like that signing all that much. They could still use a point guard, in my opinion. But, you know, that's the team that they built. As far as the offense goes, and I think this is a general principle across the board for the Lakers, they basically hired a coaching staff that is almost, you know, universally defensive-minded head coaches, right? Former head coaches. Frank Vogel's better on defense. Lionel Hollins is better on defense. They're still talking, I believe, to Ron Adams. I don't know how that interview went. Jason Kidd isn't good at anything, but, you know, I guess he's there for something. So what they did is I think they built a coaching staff that is good defensively, and then they're going to hand the offense over to LeBron. So to answer your actual question, can the coaching staff screw this up? I don't think so. Obviously, you hand the ball off to LeBron and you see how that goes for you. I would have liked to seen more of an offensive-minded tactician there to put together a system that makes more sense across the board for the entire roster that they built. I would have liked to seen that same kind of tactician there for, you know, you always need sideline out-of-bounds plays. But more importantly than anything, the Lakers are going to need from their head coach somebody who is capable of doing what is best for the team almost regardless of the political ramifications. Somebody who is able to carry that message to the rest of the roster when, no, actually, if Rajon Rondo was on the roster, he probably shouldn't be playing very much alongside LeBron. He probably shouldn't be playing very much alongside Bucky, right? If that same head coach is probably going to have to convince everybody, no, Alex Caruso actually is the best point guard on the roster by quite a bit, actually. And you know, no, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, clutch Tavious Caldwell-Pope, you are not going to play 38 minutes a game because Rich Paul is your agent, right? So that's going to be the thing to keep the closest eye on when it comes to coaching is, can Frank Vogel and then eventually can Jason Kidd handle those kinds of concerns and handle the egos involved across the a roster that, you know, makes a lot of sense, makes some sense basketball-wise. How it works culturally is another thing altogether. You never really know what those things. You really don't. Unless you're playing in San Antonio where the culture is pop, and anybody who doesn't buy into that culture gets buried in a shallow grave in the desert. Let's go. Let's take a quick second here. When we come back, I'm going to answer as many of your questions as I possibly can. This will probably get split up into a couple shows that I will release over the course of the week. There are a ton of questions now that you guys know how the roster looks, how the Lakers are going to look next year. So I will answer as many of the questions as make sense here so that I can split this up and then talk to answer the rest of them as we go later in the week. So hang tight. We'll be right back here in a bit. All right, so Arete32 writes, why do you think Kyle Kuzma is the only young player kept? And who would you have kept? I would have kept Ingram, Josh Hart, and the number four pick. So that wasn't going to happen with the trade to New Orleans. It seems like, you know, the Lakers basically gave their pick of the litter and the Pelicans picked the litter. As far as why do I think they kept Kuzma, this is going to sound stupid because it is kind of stupid, but Kyle Kuzma has done a really good job of selling himself as like the new version of Mamba mentality. It's dumb. I'm not excusing it. I'm explaining it, right? The Lakers, especially Jeannie Buss, seems to really buy into the brand that Kyle Kuzma has sold thus far. He's really worked really, really hard to ingrain himself throughout the organization in somewhat non-basketball ways. And the biggest thing that he's done is you know, he's paired himself, he's worked with Kobe at every opportunity that he can. He quotes Kobe as often as he possibly can. You even saw him last year biting his jersey so that some, you know, fans who hearken back to the years of Kobe look at that and say, oh yeah, this kid just gets it, right? And it worked. The Lakers, especially Jeannie Buss, has really bought into that aspect of his, I guess, the entire package that is Kyle Kuzma. And, you know, that's how this kind of looks. And that's why they kept him. That's why he's still around. That's why, you know, basically, from my reading of the situation when it came to the trade for Anthony Davis was, we will trade. You can have access to anything you want. Jeannie Buss told Rob Pelinka, you absolutely have to get this deal done, but you cannot get that deal done if it includes Kyle Kuzma. That's the only thing that was untouchable, and you know, I just explained the reasoning for it. Sorry. Next question here comes from Taco JC writes, How do you see the playoffs shaking out next season? Assuming the Lakers make the playoffs, who gets bumped out? What other teams got better in the Western Conference that could make the playoffs? The first team that is obviously probably going to fall out is the Oklahoma City Thunder. They seem the most likely to drop off. How, right? They traded Paul George. They seem to be trying to trade Russell Westbrook. And they're going to, you know, they're going to embrace the full teardown and rebuild over the next few years. So that they're a team that is almost definitely out of the playoffs next year. The San Antonio Spurs, every single year you wonder, okay, this has to be the year. This has to be the year that this run ends. I don't think that's how this plays out. I think they do kind of squeeze in again. The thing that the Spurs do basically is they don't worry themselves at this stage of Greg Popovich's career with trying to be a crazy upside team, a team with a crazy high ceiling. What they focus more on is how can we raise the floor to a point where every year we're right there for the playoffs at the very least. And then when we get to the playoffs, if we give a team a hard time in the first round, that's how we're considering success here in San Antonio. That has worked. They've been in the playoffs year after year after year after year. And as we've seen in recent years, they've been nothing more than, you know, a hurdle for, now sometimes a tough hurdle, but a hurdle nonetheless for some team moving forward into the playoffs. So I think the Lakers get in, Oklahoma City drops out, and we see much of the same field next year. So, and look, the Western Conference is so insane that I don't even want to bother myself with seeding right now, because it's not, I don't even know if it's really going to matter. Home court advantage is probably going to matter, but I think what matters more is which team is healthiest come playoff time. And the Lakers, you know, they've built themselves for that situation. They are not a particularly great regular season team, I don't think. I would probably top them off at about 47, 48 wins or so. But and you know, I think that's where a lot of teams are going to be. And once they get into the playoffs, though, they're the kind of team that I think will win a series or two, just because that's how they were built. They were built with that in mind. Next question here comes from Maxim McNasty, Hands Never Ashy. Hey, Anthony, when Space Jam 2 comes out, will you watch for nostalgic purposes? Also, last week you talked about you playing ball and not being as good because of age. If you could take the prime talent of any past Laker, whose would you take to destroy your brothers / possibly help the current Laker squad as currently formed? Thanks for the podcast. I'm going to go see Space Jam 2. I'm really excited for it. The people involved in the project are really, you know, they've made good projects in the past, so you have that. There is nostalgia involved, and also because Anthony Davis waived that trade kicker, and his appearance fee in Space Jam 2 is probably going to be pretty expensive. I'm going to help out where I possibly can. As far as the skills, whose skills would I take? I mean, Kobe Bryant is arguably the most skilled player in NBA history. I think I would take his skills. And ironically, you know, when I was growing up, when I could actually move and stuff, I patterned a lot of, you know, my isolation moves off of stuff that he used to do. Not nearly as well. I was nowhere near. I don't want you guys to think that I was anything other than, you know, a fairly mediocre basketball player, all things considered. But you know, I liked how he approached offense back then, and if I could have those skills and help out the Lakers, that would be great. I just don't know if a fat 5'10". Mexican point guard is really what the Lakers are going to be needing to help them out in any way, shape, or form. Let's take one more second here. Today's going to be a bit shorter of a show because I'm out here in Vegas and I'm running around trying to do as much as I can to help out the show and do all kinds of things out here. So I'm going to take a quick second. I'm going to come right back and finish off with a few more of your questions. All right, Sam the Oil Man writes, have you caught wind about Monte Ellis or Amari Stoudemire wanting to gain or show interest in the Lakers. What do you think about that? Love the show. Listen every weekday from Anthony, Texas. That's a cool city, I'm sure. But all right, so every year you hear about some former player who is trying to make their way back into the NBA. Fortunately for a lot of those guys, the Big Three exists, and that's their way to kind of get those competitive juices flowing and also get some money flowing back into their bank accounts. Monte Ellis and Amari Stoudemire, it was never going to happen. It was just, what really stood out to me about the method of getting that interest out there. I think it was Jordan Schultz who reported this, and he said, you know, Monte Ellis and Amari Stoudemire are working to make a comeback and are hoping to join any team, any competitive team, and then threw in there at the very end, such as the Lakers, right? It's not that the Lakers ever showed interest. That's just, if you get Lakers in the tweet, in the report, in the hyperlink, that just gets the word out there to the massive Lakers fan base, and is a great way to make sure that, you know, word gets out there. And you know, it's kind of funny. I'm out here with a bunch of people who also write about sports and write about basketball in the NBA. And, you know, one of the running jokes out here is just throw in Lakers in the hyperlink at the very end there. It doesn't even matter if it's about the Lakers. Maybe somebody stumbles upon it and you get a few extra clicks here and there. And, you know, it's kind of sad that that's necessary in this business, but that's how a lot of people pay the bills. Fortunately for me and my writing and the show, one, it happens kind of inherently. I do talk about the Lakers, and two, the downloads and the clicks and the eyeballs meet or they see that content regardless, and therefore I have a lot more flexibility in the things I get to talk about. I get to the show gets to be more of me and more of Pete and more of what you guys are interested in. And you know, this mailbag is an example, as I always say, of making sure that I'm talking about things that you, the listener, who is responsible for the show's success, get to that you guys want to hear about. So here I am. Let's go. Next question here comes from Westview Kid. Who are some guys other than Korver, JR, Iggy, and Avery Bradley that could potentially be buyout candidates for the Lakers? So we already know about Avery Bradley. That's been a reported signing or agreement that the Lakers have made. Iggy's tough because I don't know if Memphis is actually going to buy him out. I think the only way Memphis buys him out is if Andre Iguodala goes to them and demands that he get out of Memphis, right? And, you know, if that's something that he really wants to do, if that's something that he really truly cares about, you don't want to piss off a veteran who has as much respect throughout the league as Iguodala does. So maybe it happens there, but I do think they, you know, right now they're trying to trade him, they're trying to drum up as much interest in him as they possibly can, and therefore I think they find a trade partner. Dallas is a team that I have my eye on as a team that really, you know, you put Iguodala out there alongside Doncic, and at least defensively, they make a lot more sense. So watch. That's an outcome here that wouldn't necessarily shock me. The other guys, Kyle Korver, J.R. Smith. J.R. Smith hasn't played in the NBA. He was basically exiled in the first week of last season. So whether or not he has enough left in the tank is one thing. Before we saw him, he wasn't particularly good the year before either. So and has trouble reading scoreboards apparently. So I don't know if that's something that's really going to happen here, but you know, you never know. The Lakers are running out of roster spots, and you know, one of the roster spots I would imagine is going to go to Kyle Korver whenever he is officially bought out as well. So that's definitely, those are, I would rank those guys. Obviously Bradley has already agreed, so you have to rank him first as most likely, then Korver, then Iguodala, and then quite a gap. And J.R. Smith. Let's go. Next question here comes from the real D-Boy 12. Hey there, Dwight Howard. Now that Kawhi is gone, could we sign one-year deals and keep the max for next year and use bird rights on AD? Yes, technically, but we obviously know they aren't going to do that. They didn't do that, and I'm kind of glad they didn't. At some point, you have to build a culture. At some point, you actually have to to show further investment into the players, and they will reciprocate with further investment into the organization. And as a result, I think next year's team is going to be a lot more on the same page than we have seen over the last few years, and that's something to be legitimately excited about, as well as the amount of sense that the Lakers seem to make on the team. So that's I'm glad they didn't do that. They invested in culture. We're going to see how that looks moving forward, and with Anthony Davis and with LeBron James leading the way, All the role players have to do is just their job. Just do your job and fill the role that is being asked of you. And I think the Lakers have a chance of being really good next year. Next question, and maybe last question here, is going to come from I'm Miss D'Lo. Hey, Anthony, love the pod. Thank you. Am I the only one who feels the Clippers paid more for Paul George than the Lakers did for Anthony Davis? You can't look at it that way. The Clippers made that trade for Paul George, and the Oklahoma City Thunder knew that the Clippers were making this trade for Paul George because it also meant that Kawhi Leonard was going to the Clippers, right? So if you, whatever it was that they gave up, I think it was three picks, three first rounders, a pick swap, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, you know, all, and obviously Danilo Gallinari to make the contracts work. Was it a lot? Yeah, I don't think it was more than the Lakers gave up for Anthony Davis. They gave up Lonzo, Ingram, Hart on top of the draft compensation, right? So in that respect, I don't know if I would go so far as to say it was a humongous haul that ranks up there with what the Lakers gave up. But it was for a lesser player in Paul George, and it also meant that the Clippers were going to get Kawhi Leonard, and you make that trade every day of the week. It shouldn't even be a thought that takes very much time to make a decision on. And look, the Oklahoma City knew that, the Oklahoma City Thunder knew that, and made that handled those negotiations accordingly. So I think it's a trade that's going to work out for both teams, just like I think that the Anthony Davis trade is probably going to work out for both teams. It didn't work out for the Lakers in the same way that it did for the Clippers, right? The Lakers were hoping that by landing Anthony Davis, it would also get them Kawhi Leonard. It didn't, and as such, the trade looks a little bit worse. But you know, they still have Anthony Davis, they still have LeBron James, and the roster makes a ton of sense. And I think the Lakers have, I'd say, you know, as good, maybe slightly less, and in some cases, slightly better of a chance at winning a championship as just about any team out there. Let's go last question here from NPSD1221. Hey, Anthony, now after losing Kawhi, do we worry about the possibility of AD not re-signing? Now with a shallow bench and no third superstar for load management, a mid-to-low playoff seed is not unrealistic since it makes no sense to use high minutes for LeBron AD during the regular season. What is the likelihood that with a still shaky front office that AD leaves after 1 year and the Lakers are left scrambling for the foreseeable future? I don't think it happens. For one thing, Anthony Davis probably wants to get paid, and he will get paid by the Lakers. He wanted to come. So everybody, I've seen the comparison to the Dwight Howard situation quite a bit, and here's where, and it's an important place that it differs. Dwight Howard never was really invested in coming to the Lakers. At one point, there was legitimate doubt that he wanted to be a Laker in the first place. And then he came. He and Kobe didn't get along at all. And he peaced out. And I think here with the Anthony Davis situation, he and LeBron are going to get along a lot better than Dwight and Kobe did. And he wanted to be a Laker in the first place. So those things, can it happen? Sure, it's possible. But I don't see that happening. And if it did happen, boy, right, I mean, the Lakers would be screwed, just outright and utterly disastrously screwed. I just don't see it happening, though. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Thank you guys very much for sending in your questions. Again, if you guys have a topic that you really want covered on the show, you want to guarantee that it gets covered, send in a review in the form of a five-star, send in a question in the form of a five-star review, and I promise I will get to it. So have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you tomorrow.